Thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com as a trusted business and financial news source. Today's special guest, Peter Schiff from SchiffGold.com.
Okay, Peter Schiff, chairman of Schiff Gold, located at SchiffGold.com, author of several bestsellers. Welcome back, Peter Schiff.
Well, thanks for welcoming me back.
It's great to have you. And, you know, wanted to ask you about this U.S. equity rally. You know, we've seen this market reach some pretty frothy levels. That's on the one hand. But on the other, you know, we're not seeing too many signs of, you know, overly bullish sentiment, at least in our seven indicator here that we watch closely at USA Today. Do you have any thoughts on the sector? And
well, I don't know. I see a lot of bullishness out there because pretty much the markets think that they can't lose, right? They think that either Trump is going to revitalize the economy with massive government spending, stimulus, tax cuts, deregulation, and that's going to drive profits, and that's going to be good for the stock market. Or they think that these things are not going to happen. The economy is going to weaken, and then the Fed is going to come to its rescue with another round of rate cuts and quantitative easing. So either way, you can make a bullish argument for the stock market, or people are making a bullish argument, and so people continue to buy stocks. But, you know, one of the things I've been pointing out is that year to date, it's the foreign stock markets that are up much more than the U.S. stock markets, and the best performers are the emerging markets. So if you buy into the idea that stocks are going to go up, at least so far this year, it's foreign stocks that are going up a lot more than domestic stocks. And of course, that's being helped by the fact that today the dollar is at a 7-month low. It's almost at a 1-year low against the euro. So a lot of that optimism is already fading.
Okay, but let's talk about that U.S. dollar. We typically see the precious metals rally along with the weaker dollar, the weaker greenback. We're not getting that this time. To what do you attribute that?
Well, you know, gold is up, what, about 10-11% this year, so it has rallied, but, you know, why hasn't it rallied more? Well, I think it will. I mean, we did get a big sell order coming into the market 4 a.m. on Monday that knocked gold down about 15 bucks. I mean, every time it's about to break out, somebody comes in and sells a tremendous amount of it all at one time. So obviously there are some, you know, headwinds there. There are some people trying to keep the price of gold from rising for whatever reason, but they will not be successful long term. The gold price is going to go up as the dollar weakens. It is going to go up in particular as the Fed has to acknowledge the underlying weakness in the economy that they've been denying. You know, they're data dependent, yet they've raised interest rates now 3 times since Trump was elected, despite the fact that the data is getting worse. You know, the U.S. economy is much weaker today when the Fed is raising rates than it was under Obama when the Fed chose not to raise rates. I mean, they only raised rates really 1 time during the Obama presidency. He was there for 2 terms, and they waited till after Trump was elected to raise rates again. I think when the Fed has to admit how weak things are, that is going to really accelerate the move up in gold.
I'll contend that the Fed policymakers are drunk on their own Kool-Aid. They apparently, you know, believe these fake numbers. They believe that unemployment is at the lowest level in 30 years, whereas in reality, we have the worst underemployment, I think, in decades.
Yeah, and you know, it's all depending on your perspective. Remember when Donald Trump was a candidate, he said the unemployment numbers were fake too. Now that he's a president, he's embraced them as proof that he's doing a good job.
So tell us a bit, though, about this breakdown on the CRB. Last week, we warned subscribers and listeners that the CRB was in a free fall. Not a really positive sign when you have such a weak dollar.
A lot of it is crude oil driven, and oil may have found a bottom. We'll see. But a lot of it's also due to the incredible weakness in the U.S. economy. I mean, the U.S. economy is a major consumer of commodities, raw materials, and the fact that consumption is so weak in the U.S., is a short-term problem. Now, obviously, when the dollar falls sufficiently, then that will really invigorate international demand for commodities, because as the dollar falls, that causes global purchasing power to rise and increases the demand for commodities. Meanwhile, you know, the supply side has been constrained. I mean, there's been underinvestment. So I do think that the weakness that you're seeing in a lot of commodities is temporary. And I do expect when we get a bigger drop in the dollar, remember, even though the dollar has been weakening and it's at a 7-month low today, it's still very close to a 14, 15-year high. So, you know, the dollar index just cracked below 96 today. So we're trading, you know, we've got just below 95. But remember, In 2008, the dollar index bottomed out at about 70. So, you know, we still have a very big dollar rally to reverse.
You know, a favorite indicator, new home sales, remains relatively strong. Before 2008, 2009, the Great Recession, they refer to it now, we saw an awful lot of weakness in new home sales. I know you watch homes closely. You actually correctly anticipated the last big break in U.S. housing prices and profited. Do you see any weakness ahead there for us? And is that really the backbone holding up the U.S. economy?
You know, we got the numbers today on pending home sales, and they were down for the third consecutive month. And, you know, the media likes to blame it on a shortage of homes, but I think it's a shortage of people that can afford to buy homes. You know, the real estate market has been propped up by the Fed, has been propped up by artificially low interest rates, and by the speculative buyers who have used those low interest rates in order to lever up and purchase real estate. But, you know, home ownership is near a 60-year low. So, if home ownership is so low, you know, what's propping up the real estate prices? And it's speculators, investors who have bought up homes and are renting them out, or they're just sitting vacant. But ultimately, I think there's still a lot of risk in U.S. residential real estate. In fact, U.S. commercial real estate is maybe even more vulnerable, given the closure of stores. I mean, this is probably the worst year, or will be the worst year in history by the time it's over, for store closings and bankruptcies in the United States. And this is not the end. I mean, this is going to continue for years to come. And of course, when stores go out of business, they don't pay their rent. And when you have a lot of commercial real estate with vacant space because there are no tenants, the value of those buildings falls. And as interest rates are rising, well, that's a double whammy. So, you know, we have a lot of problems in the real estate market.
Exactly. And we have a lot of problems as well in the retail space. And some pundits, the retail apocalypse, a really weakened middle class that is struggling in the last, let's say, decade. What do you see happening here, and what does it portend for the rest of us financially?
Well, I mean, the fact that people can buy things less expensively online is a positive, especially for people who are struggling to buy the things that they're buying. And so they're trying to save money every way they can. And so they're able to do that by shopping online. I mean, one reason is a lot of times when you buy something online, there's no sales tax. So right off the bat, you've got that. And then I guess the cost structures are much lower. They don't have the labor costs. You know, with rising minimum wages, a lot of these retailers are having a hard time having to pay higher wages to workers that, you know, companies like Amazon don't deal with. They just have robots that that work in warehouses. And so this, you know, is helping people survive a falling standard of living. And, of course, you know, companies like Amazon aren't even making a profit, really. They're just selling at what it costs. So it makes it easier for them to deliver low prices because Amazon shareholders still don't care about profits. They just want to continue to grow and grow their market share, which is what has been happening. But you know, to me, it just really is a reflection of how bad things are. I think a lot of people, too, might prefer to buy things, you know, in a store. But it's cheaper to buy it online. And so that's what they do.
Okay, we talked about the retail apocalypse. Let's talk about what some folks are referring to as the robot apocalypse. The idea is, look, we just hear this week that McDonald's is replacing potentially thousands of employees with kiosks. I know the economist on one side will say, hey, you know, this is great. This is saving productivity. It's efficient. It lowers prices. The consumer benefits. And then the economy grows. Okay, but what about jobs? Return to Amazon. They now have fully automated stores for the most part. Do you see a trend here? And what does it mean, let's say, 5-10 years down the road?
Yeah, well, look, this has been going on since the beginning of time. I mean, obviously, when somebody invented the wheel, it put somebody out of work because it was, you know, once you had a wheel and you can roll things, you didn't need as many people to push, right? So anytime we come up with a tool, that's why they call it a labor-saving device, because it saves labor, which is a scarce resource. I mean, we don't have an unlimited supply of labor. So to the extent that we have tools that can do jobs, that can free up labor, then our standard of living is going to rise. And that is still the case today with automation and robots. Look, you know, I mean, this has been going on for a long time. I mean, how many people pump their own gas? At one point, nobody pumped gas because there was an attendant there that did it for you. Now we do it ourselves. You know, look at all these ATM machines. I mean, people, you know, you get money out of a bank, you don't have to talk to a teller. So this has been going on, but one of the things that is driving it faster is government, right? Because government runs up the cost of labor and makes it more advantageous for businesses to substitute capital for labor. Now, if absent government, capital is cheaper than labor, then it's always a good thing. But when you have governments artificially increasing the cost of labor so that you artificially increase the benefits of not using labor, then it's not a good thing. And so let's say that if there was no minimum wage, maybe McDonald's would not be replacing people with kiosks. Maybe, you know, if it could employ people at, you know, a market price, maybe that's still more efficient than the kiosks. But when they start saying you got to pay your unskilled workers $15 an hour plus benefits, right, plus run all the risks of being sued for, you know, violating all these various rules that you could, you know, violate as an employer. Being an employer is very risky. You know, you increase the benefit, right? When a company is deciding if it should replace workers with a machine, it does a cost-benefit analysis. And the cost is, well, what's the price of that machine? How much money do I have to spend to automate? And then what are the costs of maintaining the machine? The benefit is all the wages I don't have to pay. And so the more expensive government makes labor, the bigger the benefit to companies for eliminating labor. And so the government is accelerating all this automation as a response to higher minimum wage laws or employment taxes or mandated health benefits, all these things, you know, make it cheaper to use machines. But to the extent that companies make this decision, given these government, impediments, it's still economically better for the country. But it would be even better for the country if the government didn't force the underutilization of labor. Because obviously we have millions and millions of able-bodied people that could be employed, you know, but are not being employed because government laws make employing them illegal.
And there's so much emotion surrounding this, you know, almost threatening us, I think, civil war in this country, because we have the left and the right at war because they don't understand this dichotomy between socialism and capitalism that you've laid out here. Even though you've taken the capitalist side, do you worry that maybe there's an awful lot of leverage behind the capital that really sort of chokes out the middle class and the working class?
Middle class benefits most, and the poor, from automation and labor-saving devices, because the goal there is to reduce costs. And the people who benefit the most from a lower cost of living are the middle class. I mean, you take a very, very rich person. Take a Bill Gates, right? I mean, does Bill Gates even care, you know, what his groceries cost? Does he care what clothes cost? No. I mean, he could buy whatever he wants. He doesn't even have to look at the price. You could triple the price and it wouldn't affect him, right? But the average middle-class person, their living standard is constrained by the cost. I mean, people are constantly shopping around, I mean, looking for the best deal, using coupons, right? People try to, lower their costs because they don't have an unlimited amount of money. So to the extent that a business can drive down the price of goods, it's the middle class and the poor that are the principal beneficiaries of those lower costs, not the rich. We used to have, you know, a workforce that was the highest paid in the world. I mean, our workers were, in better position than German workers. But we lost that dominance because of government intrusion into the labor force, into the economy. I mean, what enables workers to earn more money is increased productivity, and productivity comes from capital investment, and we don't have that. And also, you know, a lot of it is training. I mean, they still have a very good apprenticeship system in Germany. I mean, they don't have this fascination with education that every kid needs to go to college. In Germany, I mean, if you don't show a proficiency for academia early on, you just get routed, you know, into a trade. And I mean, and so that makes a lot more sense. I mean, we keep our kids in high school and college that can't even read. And then, you know, by the time they're in their 20s, they have no skills whatsoever. But, you know, the best apprenticeship type system is one that develops in the free market, not through government. But of course, we've made that illegal with the minimum wage laws and the way that, you know, we punish employers for trying to train workers. You know, you should be able to hire young people for practically nothing or nothing, and they should work for you for free while you're teaching them a valuable trade. But we've made that illegal, and so, you know, you don't have that kind of apprenticeship. You know, my grandfather became a carpenter, and he came here from Europe as a young boy. But before he came here, he worked for free. In fact, his parents basically almost had to pay so that he could work full time for a carpenter in Europe. But while he worked unpaid, he learned the skills of carpentry. He didn't have to go and take out a loan to go to carpentry school. He worked for free while he was learning how to be a carpenter, and that set him up for his entire life. And he was able to support a wife and 8 children and have a home and have a car and, you know, have an entire life in America because he learned how to do something from a carpenter who wasn't required to pay him a wage. And if he was required to pay him a wage, he never would have got that opportunity. So we need to go back to that. People need to learn, not in school, but from people who actually know what they're doing, people who are, who are operating in the real world and can impart valuable skills to people. I mean, a lot of crafts and skills are lost on Americans. I mean, if you look at a lot of the jobs that require skills, they're being performed by immigrants because we don't train people in America. So if we want trained craftsmen, they're all here from other countries where they were able to learn a craft.
If I take your model a little further, I mean, what academia could do today, embrace an apprenticeship model where, look, you will receive credit when you go out and satisfy some work routine, maybe in various different areas where you show an aptitude, and then that might improve the odds of a career afterwards. You know, our high school system could have something along this line. It should be integrated. You feel as though that it's a bit wasteful because one can learn this on their own, especially with the internet today. And I think that's a pretty valid point.
For most people, higher education is a complete waste of money. You know, I mean, it's that's thanks to government, all the government subsidies that have driven up the cost of the degrees, and the fact that so many people have them basically destroys their value. I mean, there's nothing unique if you have a college degree because everybody else has the same degree. And the bottom line is you can get one of those degrees without learning anything, without improving your skills whatsoever. So how are you any more valuable to an employer?
So I think you would agree, at least if you're in a more sophisticated track, you want to become an actuary, a statistician, a lawyer, a veterinarian.
Yeah, there are some people that have more rigorous majors and that take their college experience seriously, but they're in the minority. You know, and those are the ones that should be there. But there are so many people that are there that shouldn't be there at all, but are there anyway because, you know, they've been indoctrinated into this and they've been funneled into this based on the idea that, well, if you don't go to college, you'll never amount to anything. And so everybody goes. And then you have to go, you know, you have to differentiate yourself by going for an advanced degree. So the college degree doesn't mean anything anymore. You need a master's degree, right? I mean, so serving the educational establishment that makes money off of this. But yeah, you mentioned, you know, the internet makes it easier for people to become self-educated. You know, a lot of America's, greatest minds, you know, think of the founding fathers. Most of these guys didn't go to college. They were self-educated. But one of the reasons that people did go to college is because colleges had big libraries, right? You could get access to the books that you needed by being enrolled in a university. And of course, you had the professors, they would lecture. And, you know, the only way you could hear the lectures were to have a seat in that classroom. But today, you know, you don't need a library to get books. You get all the books you want on your cell phone. And, you know, I could listen to lectures on the internet. I mean, I could go through, you know, YouTube or all sorts of podcasts. I could get the best minds teaching me whatever I need to know. I don't have to go near a classroom.
Okay, and as we wrap up here today, just a quick discussion on Zero Hedge. They noted this sort of flash crash, which I don't really think it was, on Monday you referred to. They saw 18,000 contracts over $2 billion dumped on the market in 1 minute. The volume was over 150% over the average in the London Stock Exchange. Do you see the powers that be behind the scenes here, or was this just a big hedge fund dumping?
I don't know who's behind it, but, you know, you notice this all the time in the gold market, you know, and generally it's in the morning, but all of a sudden there'll be a large sell order that'll come in and just hit the market. And it's, you know, it's very puzzling because normally, let's assume that you're trying to sell gold. The idea would be to get the best possible price for the gold that you're selling. You wouldn't want to just dump it all on the market and knock the price down $15 or $20. why wouldn't you just slowly sell over the course of the day and not lose that $20, right? But for some reason, you always get these big sellers that seem to be more interested in knocking the price of gold down than getting a good, you know, price on the gold that they're selling. And so you think, well, what is their motivation for doing this? And I don't know. I mean, there could be some way they profit, maybe on options trades that have been done, or maybe in the gold stock market. Maybe, okay, we'll lose an extra 10 or 20 bucks dumping all this gold, but maybe they make it someplace else. But I don't know if it's just all about just trying to keep the lid on the price of gold. Hey, every time it looks like it's about to break out, let's just dump it so we can do some technical damage so we can stop it from happening. But, you know, eventually that's not going to work. I mean, the fundamentals can't be stopped. And if there is somebody or some collection of somebodies that are just trying to prevent the gold price from going up by dumping gold into the market, there is not an unlimited amount of it. They're going to run out. And, of course, if they're just selling futures contracts and selling futures contracts, at some point, somebody is going to want to take delivery of those contracts. Or, you know, somebody, they can't keep the price down indefinitely.
Exactly. I mean, I think it really amounts to a giant naked short position. Just as we saw with many of the dot bombs, they were just shorted to oblivion. The only other thing I'd add in here is that I think we may be seeing the canary in the coal mine with the crypto domain. Because, look, you've got a market that simply cannot be naked shorted yet. They haven't figured out a way yet to cap these markets for good, meaning long term.
And this is why, too, people need to get some physical gold. Don't think that, oh, I'm long a gold futures contract, so I own gold. The guy that's on the other side of that gold contract doesn't have any gold to deliver. And, you know, this thing could blow up. You need to own real gold. You need to get it in your hands. You know, buy it for me at Shift Gold. You know, get some real physical gold bars, gold coins in your possession. And I mentioned this before, everybody that listens to your show should own some of their gold through Gold Money. You know, go to goldmoney.com and set yourself up an account. Buy some gold online. The cheapest way I know to buy it, it's 0.5% over spot. Right? So buy yourself some gold. You can have delivery whenever you want, but the key is not to take delivery. Keep the gold in your account. It's in your name. You own it, but you can also spend it, right? You can spend it, you can give it to people. You can use it to buy goods and services. You can spend it through an app on your cell phone. You can access it through a debit card, and you can spend your gold the same way you would spend your dollars using your bank ATM card. It lets you bank your gold. It lets you check out of the government banking system where the banks could fail or you can get bailed in and check into your own vault by Brinks where they're holding your gold for you, where you have instantaneous access to it 24/7. It's a digital wallet full of gold, right? And I know you got a lot of people now that are getting into these cryptocurrencies. These are just self-perpetuating Ponzi schemes. People are going to lose a lot of money in crypto fiat currencies the same way they're going to lose it in paper fiat currencies. People need to own real money, and gold money is a great way to do it. You know, goldmoney.com, and, you know, more importantly, too, not only can you become an account holder and keep gold at Gold Money, but to the extent that you can tell your friends about it and get them to sign up, they have a referral program where every time your friend buys some gold, you can get a little commission on it. And every time your friend uses a debit card, spends some gold, trades his gold for silver or something like that, whenever there's a fee that's generated, if you introduce the account, you could earn a little revenue stream as a result of having helped establish that account.
Give us an idea as we wrap up here today, just how you could see this unfold with the precious metals. I mean, obviously, we don't have a crystal ball, but there are some signs out there, and you've written about it in your newsletters. Is that a major threat to dollar hegemony?
Oh, yeah. Look, dollar hegemony is going to go eventually. I mean, and it's going to happen quicker once it happens. And, you know, I don't know what the catalyst is going to be that's going to cause gold to take off. I mean, it may, in fact, have no catalyst at all. I mean, gold may move up hundreds of dollars an ounce or maybe more one morning or overnight for no apparent reason. It's because it should already be much higher. So I don't know what the event is going to be to trigger it, and there may not be any particular event. It may all of a sudden just happen because it's inevitable that it's going to happen. But clearly, you know, as more people start to appreciate the predicament that the U.S. is in, that the Fed is basically been lying or just been ignorant. I mean, Janet Yellen was out this week saying that we're never going to have another financial crisis in our lifetimes. She's confident of that. Meanwhile, they were just as confident that we weren't going to have the last financial crisis. But, you know, that one was caused by the Fed, and they were oblivious to it right up until it was over. They're just as oblivious to the one that's looming in our future. I mean, it's not like we're never going to have it again, and it's actually going to happen sooner rather than later. So as people figure this out, you're going to have an abrupt change. You know, when the Fed, I think, when they have to acknowledge the weakness of the economy, when they have to stop hiking rates and start cutting them again, when they have to do QE4, you know, if the dollar, if, you know, we could even make it until then, I mean, look out.
It reminds one of Fisher's comments just before the peak in 1929 stock market. We've reached a permanent plateau of stock prices. So, I mean, this is history rhyming, repeating over again. Peter Schiff, any other contact information, or maybe you'd like to plug some of your other services?
Yeah, well, remember, anybody that wants to get involved, I mentioned, you know, the foreign stock markets are just on fire, the emerging markets in particular. You know, we manage a lot of accounts here at Europe Pacific Capital. I've got my family of mutual funds. So if you want to get money out of the U.S. and out of the U.S. dollar and invest it abroad in the countries that I like, places like Singapore and New Zealand and Switzerland and Hong Kong, give us a call, you know, at Europe Pacific Capital. It's europac.com is my website, europac.com. And, you know, you can call us at 800-727-7922 to talk to one of my representatives, get a broker. And also, you know, make sure and follow me online. I mean, go to my my podcast, Schiff Radio. They're also on my YouTube channel. Just search Peter Schiff. It's the Schiff Report on YouTube. Friend me on Facebook or Twitter, follow me. Just make sure and listen. It's not just, you know, the Goldseek radios I do once in a while, but I put out my own content every week. There's new stuff coming out, so you don't have to wait for these appearances, you know, these times. I mean, listen to everything that I'm doing.
I'd also add the Europac Gold Fund is just one of the few out there that's really worth paying attention to. And I think you have maybe like a Class A, Class B.
You can buy the fund at Europe Pacific Capital, but there you can get them at Schwab and Fidelity if they're in the account. It's the Europe Pacific Capital. Our symbol is EPGFX, so if you don't want to confuse it, if you're trying to find it. The manager on the fund is Adrian Day. It's managed. ETFs are pretty much passive, where you just have a basket of stocks and it never changes. But we adjust the basket. We try to pick the best stocks. And, you know, when it comes to gold stocks, you know, not a lot of these gold stocks are, you know, are frauds. I mean, there's a lot of them that are landmines, not gold mines. So you really have to know your stuff, especially when you venture into the junior miners. I mean, that is, you know, where you have to know what you're doing. I mean, anybody can buy a senior mining company, right? I mean, they're, you know, but to try to find the potential in the exploration companies, there you really need to be an expert and know what you're doing.
Very good. All right, Peter Schiff, we'll have all your links up and look forward to hearing more from Peter Schiff.
Great. All right.